I am Duncan MacLeod, born 400 years ago in the Highlands of Scotland. I am immortal, and I am not alone. For centuries we have waited for the time of the gathering, when the stroke of a sword and the fall of a head will release the power of the quickening. In the end, there can be only one.
Here we are, born to be kings, we're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, Season 1, Episode 23, the Season 1 Recap Special. As always, to guide you through the world of immortals and the time of the gathering, I'm your host Travis, aka TV's Travis, and with me is the one who watches my back and keeps me from losing my head. And that's Audie. How you doing, Audie?
Doing good, Travis.
Good, good. You had a decent week?
Yeah, not too bad. We had a turkey that we never used for Thanksgiving, so we did Thanksgiving 2.0 on Saturday. So.
Oh, nice. Nothing.
Got my fill and have plenty of leftovers in the kitchen, in the fridge.
Awesome. Can't go wrong there. So We have come to the end of season one, and it was a ride.
We made it.
We did. We had some ups. Darius as a character. We both very much like the relationship between Duncan and Tessa. And
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I really was too. That was like an unexpected and not well remembered good point about the show. Mm-hmm. We had some downs. We both very much didn't like the use of Amazing Grace in the episode yeah. Saving Grace, and basically all of the episode Deadly Medicine was kind of a downer.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some moments we both really liked. We had some moments we didn't like. We've got some awards to give out, for this season. So I say we jump right into it and we start off with kind of our best and worst of season one.
Sure.
What's the matter?
Sometimes being a Catholic priest is easier than other times.
Anything you want to talk about?
Would that I could, my friend. Would that I could.
And so, our favorite and least favorite kind of moments or episodes of the series. So this is season one, and we're going to start with Duncan. He's the lead in the show, after all, so he gets to go first. So, our favorite Duncan MacLeod moment or episode, and I'll start. And my favorite moment from Duncan, honestly, was from the Family Tree episode where he beats up Peter DeLuise, and kind of just that any moment of that Duncan, right? That kind of cocky Duncan, just fun. Like when he's toying with somebody, when he's having fun. And
right.
it just always kind of makes me smile because I think you can see Adrian Paul having fun with those moments and it works. So that's my favorite Duncan moment. How about you?
My favorite is Duncan from Bad Day in Building A, where he is just taking everybody out.
Oh, yeah.
We start off the series with, hey, he's a Highlander. He's, you know, good with a sword. Man, this episode, we show just what kind of a tactician Duncan MacLeod is at taking people out one by one, slowly but surely. When those guys took over the courtroom and
yep.
shot him, left him for dead, thinking, he's done. And then him, like, on top of that, helping that little girl and keeping her from getting hurt at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great version of Duncan, too. I like that. Duncan, the tactician, because he got pissed, right? He was just pissed at that point. Angry Duncan. Don't make him angry. So, all right, so there's your favorite moment. Why don't you give us your least favorite Duncan stuff of season one?
The one that came back that I was thinking about was just at the end of episode one, where he's just trying to run away. Like, it almost feels antithetical to the Duncan we get throughout the series, where he doesn't back away from a fight, where he tries to figure out what he can do. Now, given it's the first episode, he's reintroduced to the game, however long he's been out of it, but it's just like, okay, I guess I understand it, but.
Yeah, I think, too, that was also sort of the production hedging their bets of, like, this is our pilot episode, and in case we don't get picked up, it sort of wraps the story up. So I guess. My least favorite Duncan from season one was actually Brooding Duncan. and it would be like the end of Bad Day at Building A, or the end of an episode where, and it just, because he's back in the game for the first time in a while, and he's been out of it, and all of this, which that sort of gets glossed over as the series goes on. But I just, brooding Duncan never did anything for me, because it never felt like it was that earned. It felt, because you didn't get any connection to some of these characters. Now, if it's a character that's been around for a while that goes and he gets upset, that makes sense. But we have no connection to this random immortal that he supposedly has known. So it's hard for me to really get behind that. Or, again, Bad Day at Building A was the one that really got me, because it's like he gets so upset, he gets so pissed off at these guys, he does all this stuff, and then he wanders off like he's angry and a puppy with his tail between his legs, and that just didn't do it for me. So that's kind of my least favorite Duncan.
Yeah, he's kind of like Lone Samurai walking away from the Building A.
Yeah, and it felt like they really, especially early on, were trying to kind of lean into that, and they sort of moved away from it. You still would get the occasional introspective moment, but they felt more in line with his character later on in the series, and then especially even in this season.
Right.
So our next character is Tessa. She's kind of the next most important character in the series, if not for season one, the most important. So let's start with you. And what was your favorite Tessa moment or episode in season one?
I really dug her in the episode Mountain Men, when she gets captured and is basically not your typical damsel in distress. Like, from the get-go, she's trying to figure out how she can either help Duncan find her or get away from these guys. And time again, they get up in her face and she's like, all right, good luck.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. And mine actually is very similar to that, because they wrote Tessa very strong and gave her a lot of agency in this series. And my favorite moment was from Freefall, where Felicia, who's played by Joan Jett, shows up at her studio, and Tessa's like, you ain't doing this to me, and pulls out the blowtorch and threatens her with the blowtorch. Like, and the line she gives, I may not kill you, but I will give you a bad facial or something like that. Like, it just, that's Tessa in a nutshell. And it's great, because she's just, she don't take shit from nobody. And I love it.
Right.
Now, my least favorite incarnation of Tessa throughout the series or season was the episode in France where she finds out that her friend is a prostitute. And I think it's because it felt so off for her character to be that judgmental. First of all, I didn't like some of the, hey, it's my old friend that we kept getting over and over. They did that a lot. But it's a, you know, it's her old friend, but she hasn't talked to her in years. And she just came off super judgmental, and it rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't like that version of Tessa.
Right. I was the same way. And I think this is one of those times where the show has not aged as well. And that definitely seems like writing of the time of saying prostitution, bad, just bad.
Yeah.
Bad, bad, bad. But it was really interesting how Tessa, like, super not cool with it. But then, you know, Duncan was okay. Like, he was like, it's been around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that just...
I was just going to say, definitely, like you said, it just seems really out of character for Tessa.
Mm-hmm. Especially given the way that we saw her throughout the season and the type of person that she was, and how she didn't fly off the handle and get overly emotional about a lot of stuff, even stuff that had to deal with Duncan. She would get upset with Duncan, but then their relationship was strong enough that you never got that. But that little bit mini arc, and yeah, she comes out of it by the end of the episode, but it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, it should have been written better if she had that feeling of not to be, like, just blowing up about it. I can understand writing it where she is somebody who's against it, but, man, the way she flew off the handle right away about it, it's just like...
Yeah, yep, the whole, like, oh, she's throwing her life away thing. It just... No, that was just stilted, poor writing, and it's unfortunate that, you know, the character had to go through that. So, and then our third main character is Richard H. Ryan. Good old Richie. Now, for me, my favorite moment with Richie was in Eye of the Beholder, where he gets caught in Gabriel's apartment and gets out of it by dousing him or lighting the carpet on fire, which also lights Gabriel mm-hmm. on fire to get out.
Right.
Partly because he knows at this point that that's not going to kill Gabriel, but it's his only way to get out of there. So it's this, his motivations at that point were a little bit horny teenager, but also a kind of a more altruistic, like, look, this guy's just a jerk and I don't like him. Gets caught, gets himself out of it, knowing that there's going to be repercussions. And so it was simultaneously like this very headstrong movement, but also kind of a mature thing from Richie. And we were seeing him grow a little bit. So that was my favorite
right.
moment from him.
Honorable mentioned it later on in that episode where he pretends to be blind so a cop can walk him across the street so he can get the cop's gun and then confront Gabriel a second time.
Yes, that was also very good. That was the one time, or one of the few times, where I really believed that he was this kind of kid from the streets to come mm-hmm. up with that elaborate of a thing.
Yeah.
So what was your favorite Richie moment?
Well, my favorite is pretty much the most recent episode we watched was Hunters. And when he comes in and helps Duncan, who's getting beat up by a bunch of hunters, mm-hmm. and everybody's looking, and then Richie just comes roaring with his motorcycle. Just like, just a great action moment for him. And just like, Richie, again, smart street kid, knows what he's doing, trips a bunch of people with a bike, helps fight. And just him and Duncan walking away from the fight. He takes off his helmet, just, you know, put some nunchucks in there, walks away like it was nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, I mean, of the three main characters, Richie had the most growth throughout the season. And it was cool to see because, mm-hmm. let's be honest, those first few episodes, he's kind of rough. And they yeah. managed to find a way to write him well. And Stan Kirsch did a great job creating that character and really making him grow throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Now, what was your least favorite moment?
Man, just that early part of him just being a little wisecracking kid and just feeling so cookie cutter mm-hmm. of a character. Or just like, okay, I'm the street kid because I can talk street because yep. I have a friend on the street.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Same for me. I think I said his gang was the Banana Republic gang. It never felt like he was the tough kid from the streets. Now, we saw him do some yeah. things that made him feel like he grew up on the streets later on.
Mm-hmm.
But the tough kid, the bravado, that never landed with me. And I think it's partly Stan Kirsch, just he's too good looking of a guy and he's got that curly blonde hair and his look doesn't say I grew up in the mean streets fighting people all the time. His voice doesn't quite right. carry it very well. Just, and the way his costuming, the cut off like denim vest mm-hmm. and the shoes that they would give him, all that kind of stuff. It just never. So yeah, same thing. Those first few, especially in the first few episodes where they really tried to push that, his wisecracking didn't come off as snarky. It came off as somebody's younger brother who was around snarky people.
Right.
All right. And then finally, let's pick our favorite and least favorite episodes. So I'll start. Mm-hmm. My favorite episode in the season, and this was a tough one. There was a couple of different episodes I could have chosen, and they were all actually right around the same period in the season. But For Evil's Sake, which is the first episode that takes place fully in Paris, for me is, I think, the best in the combination of the story, the storytelling, the characters that they have, the guest stars, and the action. Band of right. Brothers, which came right after it, was really, really good. Or I'm sorry, before it, and introducing Darius, who is a great side character. But I felt like For Evil's Sake had the better villain, and so it felt a little bit more complete. And it had my single favorite moment in season one of two immortals talking, especially rival immortals, that didn't involve any fighting. And that was Kyler and mm-hmm. Duncan outside that church across from the liquor store. It's right. that... it's reminiscent of the diner scene in Heat, right? Where it's the two rivals and they know they're rivals. And plus you got a really good insight into Kyler and how just unhinged he is. So yeah, for me, for evil's sake, best episode of season one. How about you?
For me, it's the episode for Tomorrow We Die, which introduces Xavier St. Cloud. Mm-hmm. Just a whole episode of Duncan matching wits with Xavier, trying to figure out his game, figure out what he's doing. Also dodging, LeBron, Inspector LeBron throughout all this. And LeBron recognizing Duncan and putting things together. It's like, ooh, there's a lot of pieces being put together here. And some of them we don't get a conclusion for, which is fine. Like, it's like LeBron figures out he remembers Duncan. What's going to happen with that?
Yep.
And then, again, just matching wits with Xavier, who's like super, super the guy who's going to try and take you out from as far away as possible.
Yeah. Honestly, the three episodes in a row, Band of Brothers, For Evil's Sake, and For Tomorrow We Die, are the three best episodes. Oh, yeah. In this series, and I could have chosen any one of those, but I really, really liked For Evil's Sake. That's a great choice, though. For Tomorrow We Die is really good. Again, strong villain and strong storytelling, especially you mentioned it, and I didn't forget, but it didn't come top of mind, the whole subtext with LeBron and all of that, too. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we get a fight with an immortal, and it doesn't resolve in a beheading at all.
Yeah. I think that was the first time we saw that.
Resolves in a behanding, but beheading.
Yeah. All right. So that's your favorite episode. What's your least favorite episode?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to have to go with Deadly Medicine, which had our favorite star, Joey Pants. And it just was not a well-written episode, and there was so much that we just didn't know about Joey Pants's character as to why he's doing anything. It just felt super forced, like hand wavy as to what he's doing. It's like, well, why the heck is he doing? Okay, he's an evil mad scientist.
Yeah.
Why? Like, seriously, why?
Yeah, no, it same for me. Deadly Medicine is the worst episode of season one. And I hate that because I love Joe Pantoliano. I love him as an actor.
Yeah.
He's terrible. He is really bad. It's partly writing and partly choices he made with the character, his disappearing, reappearing accent of indeterminable origin. I think he went through like three different accents in the episode. And it's
something like that.
It's just it's stilted, it's uneven writing, the story doesn't make any sense. You know, his characterization changes from scene to scene. It had Randy in it, which we both didn't like her as a character. It just wasn't a good episode. Plus 90% of the time, Duncan is just drugged and off screen stumbling around.
Yeah.
Which was also really lame. So it was an attempt to make an episode with a human antagonist, but they didn't do a very good job of it. So definitely the worst.
And that
episode.
Duncan being all drugged up was very like hand wavy as to what an immortal can endure. It's like many other episodes, it's like anything like that, it just kind of waved off in like a few minutes. But him like a day and a half like that, I was like, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was just bad. So yeah, those are our favorite and least favorite of the main cast and episodes for season one. Now, it's time to give out some awards.
Bum, bum, bum.
I'm Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. And I am Connor MacLeod. Same clan, different vintage.
And that means that it is award time. And we're going to start off with the Kurgan Award, which is the award that goes to the best villain of season one. Our nominees are...
I feel like we need to like, la, 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 la.
Yeah, definitely. So our nominees for the Kurgan Award are, from the episode For Evil's Sake, Kyler. Number two, from the episode For Tomorrow We Die, Xavier St. Cloud. And from the episode The Lady and the Tiger, we have Zachary Blaine. And our winner is...
Opening the envelope. Sticker stuck. All right. It is Kyler.
Kyler. I can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely, he was my favorite villain of season one. He's just,
yeah,
it literally is for evil for evil's sake. And he's got that great moment with Duncan. He's just a bad dude.
Right.
And he's also
a performer, yes, in this episode. And he just, his performance, you know, as the actor playing this character was amazing.
Yeah, it really was. And he's a good physical double to Duncan. He's the same. He's a little bit taller, mm-hmm, than him. He's arguably a better swordsman than Duncan. More well-trained. Right. So that worked pretty well for me. So that Kyler, for evil's sake, wins our Kurgan Award for the best villain.
Yep.
Next up, the Dragonhead Katana Award for the best weapon, not Duncan MacLeod's katana. And our nominees for this one are Blaine's Damascus Sword from The Lady and the Tiger,
mm-hmm,
Caleb Cole's Axe from the episode Mountain Men, and Grayson's Flamberge Sword from the episode Band of Brothers. And yep, Audie's got the envelope, so the winner of this one is...
Don't want to cut my finger. Grayson's Flamberge Sword from Band of Brothers.
And this was a tough one because we both really liked the Damascus Sword and Blaine as a character. Mm-hmm. And the axe was a cool kind of different weapon than a sword. And it was, again, another really good episode. But there's something about, mm-hmm, the look of that Flamberge Sword. And it...
Yeah.
When you see it and it... And if you're watching the series, it comes from a really iconic fight with Grayson and Duncan, and it's that midpoint season thing. So they went all out with the budget on the fight, and it's on those giant, mm-hmm, hills of sulfur and all that. It was cool. And that, yeah, sword just, there's something about a Flamberge sword that just gets me every time.
Yeah. And that one is a more ornate one. And it was just, it's a super cool sword.
Yeah,
to have for your villain compared to Duncan with his Dragonhead Katana.
Yes, absolutely. All right, moving on, we have the Christopher Lambert Award for the best guest star of season one. And the nominees are... Yeah. The nominees are Vincent Schiavelli in Innocent Man, J.E. Freeman in Family Tree, and Roger Daltrey in The Hunters. Three really solid guest stars, and it was hard to narrow down to just three. There were a lot of good guest stars in this, mm-hmm, season. But yeah, the winner of the Christopher Lambert Award is...
Here we go. Vincent Schiavelli.
It had to be. He just... Yeah. I mean, he put on an acting clinic in that episode, honestly. I love... Mm-hmm. And I'm a fan of his anyway. He always brought something, right, interesting. But playing that character, and he was the Vietnam vet having kind of flashbacks... But he did it in a way that didn't feel trite. It felt like it was really, right, giving honor to that type of character. So,
yeah. For sure. And he, like we talked about in trying to figure this out, he raised the frickin' bar on acting in this show on episode 2.
Yep.
Good Lord, dude. Thanks for coming in and just showing everybody and then stumbling right off the stage and be like, good luck, guys. Have, yeah, fun.
Pretty much. So I dug that. All right, we got a couple of fun categories here. We're going to have the, mm-hmm, Maple Leaf Award for the most Canadian character in this this series that's set in the Pacific Northwest of America and France, but it was shot in Canada. We have our most Canadian characters, and our nominees are Brian Slade from Bad Day at Building A. He was the bad guy in that one. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Stosh Kaminsky in Bad Day at Building A and Free Fall. And finally, mm-hmm, Sheriff Benson, played by Wes Studi, in the episode Mountain Men. So this one, I mean, there's a drum roll, there's a card, but you kind of already know who it is.
Yes, Brian Slade.
Yeah, he was as Canadian gets with that accent. It was phenomenal. And our theory... Our running theory is that they told him they were shooting in Vancouver, and he thought that meant the character was from Vancouver, and nobody wanted, mm-hmm, to tell him differently. And
yeah,
whether or not that's actually what happened, that's the story I'm sticking with. So
Yeah, pretty much. I wonder how many people he was doing this on set and nobody realized any difference that much.
I don't know. But it's that episode is worth watching just for his accent, too. It's just so good. It's so good.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorite, you know, episodes. Again, it was one of those that I know I saw a lot because that one was rerun all the time.
Yeah.
But there's so many good things about that episode, including his Canadian-ness.
Oh, all right. And we have the Escargot Award for the most French character. Now, half the season takes place in Paris. So this was, there were, again, quite a few possibles here. But our nominees are Maya from Eye of the Beholder, Richie's love interest and young French supermodel. Laurie Bellien. Laurie was in Nowhere to Run and portrayed by a very young 18-year-old Marion Cotillard. And finally, Georges Dalou from For Tomorrow We Die, who was an older French resistance fighter. And the award, the Escargot Award for the most French character goes to...
And I'm going to do a terrible French accent and say the award goes to Georges Dalou.
Yeah, and he was just the epitome of an old French man, and I loved him. Like, he was just so much fun. He flirted with Tessa. He had a great couple of scenes. He's only in a couple of scenes, but he steals them, and him and Adrian Paul have a great back and forth. It was just fun. He was just a cool character.
As much as he was French, he was also old man.
Yes.
And just, like, he's that old man that's going to hit on any lady, no matter her age, and get away with it because he's just that charming.
Yep, exactly. So he was great. That was the character of Georges Dalou. And our final award for the evening is going to be the Reginald Vell Johnson Award for the Best Police Officer. And I'm not going to explain the name of that award, but if you know, you know. And if not, you can look it up. The nominees...
Yeah, kids ask for your parents.
Yes. The nominees for the Reginald Vell Johnson Award for Best Police Officer were Inspector LeBrun, played by Hugh LaForestier, Sergeant Powell, played by Wendell Wright, and Sergeant Bennett, played by Tim Reed. We had a few different police characters throughout the series, throughout the season, and it felt like they could never quite nail down exactly who they wanted.
Some of them they didn't even give names to.
Yeah, some of them were just officer or detective. But either way, we had those were the three most prominent ones. And our choice for the Reginald Vell Johnson Award for the Best Police Officer goes to...
Get this envelope out, and it's Sergeant Bennett, played by Tim Reed.
And really, he was the best one. He had a close runner-up was Inspector LeBrun, if for no other reason than the scene where he kicks the guy in the face, because it just came out of nowhere.
It's like, we French are trained in all kinds of martial arts. Wapa!
What I liked about LeBrun was he had some history with Duncan, very brief history, but he had, and they did play with that a little bit, but Sergeant Bennett, I felt like, and we both agreed, had a better arc. He had a better kind of progression as a character over a couple of episodes. He starts off very antagonistic with Duncan, doesn't trust him at all, doesn't really believe him. And by the time Bennett's not in the series anymore, he's semi-reluctantly sort of believing that, hey, maybe Duncan's not that bad a guy, and he just is kind of getting in the wrong place at the wrong time. So,
right. Or that he is somebody who's worthy of respecting for what he can do.
Yeah.
Definitely feel like it's funny thinking about it, but Sergeant Bennett and Inspector LeBrun come in kind of the same way. Super ticked that someone like McLeod would dare challenge their authority at all. But I feel like Bennett has a better rapport with Duncan than LeBrun ever got a chance to.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. That's just the way they played those characters. I'm glad they weren't the same. Like, they definitely made LeBrun more of a chip on his shoulder kind of guy. Bennett was more of a, you know, more times than not, Duncan's right, or what he's doing seems like okay. Like,
yeah, yep, I can agree with that. So there you go. There's the awards for season one. Now some of those awards are going to come back in season two, and some of them may or may not. We'll see. We'll see at the end of that season. But those are your awards for season one of Highlander the series.
Da da da.
Incidentally, I owe you an apology. Anthony was very sloppy. I killed him for you.
You're mad, Kyler.
Maybe. Maybe I'm just trying to excel at what I do. Didn't you ever want to be the best at something?
And so that concludes the recap of season one of Highlander, the series. I think overall, it was good. Now, I have to preface that by saying this was a time when a TV show could get a season or two under its belt before it really hit its stride. You don't see that anymore. It's really hard to do. Right. Nowadays, especially over the last, say, 10 to 12 years, TV series almost always start, if it's any good, it starts off like gangbusters and then it tapers off, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just, it was a different time. If you look back at television of this era, whether it was Highlander, whether it was Star Trek, The Next Generation, whether it was Seinfeld, a lot of shows were given the ability to have a rocky first season. And this definitely is that. But they were allowed to continue on. I mean, if you were making Highlander the series right now and this was the season that you put out, first of all, it's super dated, but let's take it out of its time. Let's plop it current with current technology to film it. It doesn't make it past this first season.
Right.
Which is unfortunate.
Also, this is the thing of back in the day when it was all, everything was network TV. You didn't have your Netflix, your Amazons to pay for short seasons. Everything was 20 something episodes.
Yeah.
And you did whatever you could with those 20 something episodes. Some of them were awesome episodes. Some of them were not. And I think we've figured out that for the most part, most of the episodes are at least good.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that one with Joey Pantoliano. Except for that one.
Yeah, skip that one.
We're all good. They weren't great. Not all of them. But there were enough that were great. And really, even in between the really good ones, there was so much where they showed off Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
They showed off Duncan and Tessa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, we're saying it again. One of the best written relationships on television. And it's weird to find that in the Highlander show. And then you've got Richie and this little family they make.
Yep. Yeah, it really, that I think was the thing going back and watching this season that surprised me the most was that relationship with Duncan and Tessa and how strong it was as the two of them and how real it felt. It felt like a relationship. Right. Based in reality and not a televised relationship. They would argue, but the arguments never were contrived. And if it was something silly that they would argue about, which let's face it, real couples do that, it dissolved very quickly. Mm-hmm. They didn't hold grudges. Right. They were there for each other. And I really appreciated that. It's one of those things where if the series was being made today, it wouldn't be 22 episodes a season. They'd cut that way down. Mm-hmm. They'd get rid of the filler.
Yep.
It's watchable. There's definitely high points and low points between, I mean, Deadly Medicine was one. Really, a lot of the first half of the first season is rougher, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Whether it's The Road Not Taken, I felt like was trying to cram too much story in. And that one wasn't so great. Innocent Man was a good episode, but Free Fall you could do without. The Joan Jett episode doesn't really bring anything. It's poor work from Stan Kirsch as Richie. It's not well written. You know, Bad Day at Building A, I wouldn't get rid of just because it's so much fun. That's like a total camp episode. Plus it had Ken Kersinger and Vladimir Kulich in it. And I love that. Like as the TV and movie geek in me is seeing them and I'm like, that's cool. I know those guys. You know, there's some stronger, it got stronger as it went along.
For sure.
They figured out how to write, and they were really inventing their mythos. It wasn't a known quantity. Yes, the show Highlander, or the movie Highlander had already been out, but they were really breaking new ground and creating a mythology. It wasn't an adaptation of a story. It wasn't a comic book brought to the screen or an established world like a Star Trek. They were really creating their own world. So I give them a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
You know, if if you watch this season knowing it is a show from 1992, that'll help a lot, first of all, because there's definitely some cheese. This was, again, in an era where shows were either on a network or they were direct to syndication and sold to networks around the world, as this one was. And it was very different from shows that get put up for streaming services nowadays, because that budget, again, you got to stretch that budget over more episodes. Mm-hmm. And they're filming these things. They are writing an episode and figuring out the writing for it while they're filming an episode, while they're editing another episode, all at the same time to fit these production schedules. So to be able to pull that off at all is pretty impressive. And overall, if you like the mythos at all, or you're interested in it in any way, it's not a slog to get through season one, and there are a couple of episodes you can skip if you want, but overall it's definitely watchable.
It's one of those things where we talk about the bad stuff and we point it out, but overall it's a super good first season, especially when you consider pretty much everybody in here is not well known at all. Like, the most well-known person I would say that was in this was Tim Reed, and he played a cop a couple episodes, and that was about it.
Yeah.
Like, where was Adrian Paul before this that anybody really knew him and knew that he could lead a series like this?
That's true. He had been in, I think it was the TV series of War of the Worlds prior to this. Was kind of his most high-profile thing, and even that, I don't think he came along until partway through. So, yeah. You look at it, Tim Reed, Joey Pantoliano was fairly well known at this point. He had been around for a little while.
Yeah, probably.
But quite honestly, the people that were the most well known in this would have been Joan Jett, Roger Daltrey, Roland Gift from the Fine Young Cannibals, the musicians that they had in there, and Queen.
Yeah.
Queen, you know, having that. And being able to have a Queen song as your opening theme really helps a show like this, especially at the time when people are flipping through channels and they happen to catch, ooh, what's this? And they're hearing Queen. It's going to hook people and get them in to watch this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I will say the show gets better. So if you thought season one was just okay, keep watching, because they really build a very interesting world. That we're going to be diving into. But before we get to season two, we have decided that we are going to review the first movie. So next week, instead of an episode, Audie and I are going to be reviewing Highlander from 1986, starring Christopher Lambert. Now, there's no Duncan. There's no Tessa. There's no Richie. But this is Highlander, the film, which started the whole franchise. It is available to stream on Amazon Prime, so you have a week to watch it ahead of time if you haven't seen it before. Amazon Prime, at least in the U.S. I don't know outside the U.S., but that's what we're going to be talking about next week, is Highlander, starring Christopher Lambert. So a fun little kind of palate cleanse before we jump into season two in a couple of weeks. We will be taking a couple weeks off after the movie for the holidays. Spend some time with family as much as we can, or just, you know, recharge the batteries and then hit season two. Next week is going to be Highlander the movie. So come on back. We're going to talk about that. That'll be fun, because I definitely like it. Plus,
Do you know which version we're watching?
There's only one version of this movie that I know of.
Okay.
It's not like Highlander.
Nigel in the chat's mentioned
two
something.
I'm going to go with theatrical, because I don't think the director's cut is what's streaming on Prime.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this is by far the best of the movies. All right, so yeah, join us next week.
Sorry, spoiler.
Well, it's not that big of a spoiler, really. But join us next week for Highlander the film, which will end season one of this wonderful show. Let's watch Highlander. And remember that until then, there can be only one actually good Highlander movie.
There you go.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.